Welcome back to lecture 2. This is the fourth and final video where we'll look at moorings and wrap things up with some more quick examples and an overview of what we've covered in this lecture. The next measurement platform is the mooring. This is when basically you have a cable that has a float on it to keep it vertical, and then weighted at the bottom. So in the middle here we have a very simple example. So here we have some weights. A very common weight is a train wheel. Very heavy and available. Then you have a chain maybe or a rope that extends vertically and is held in position by a big float at some point. So this particular mooring, within the float we have an ADCP which looks upwards and measures currents, a vertical profile of currents. We also mount a releaser, that's here, which allows us to recover this mooring because it does not reach the surface. So we can send a signal to the releaser, it opens up, and then because of the buoyancy of this float, it all floats to the surface. But of course it means that we leave the anchor weights behind. There are other many other variations of a mooring. So you can see many different examples here. Some are connected to the surface as shown in these two examples. And maybe they have some way to communicate so you can get get the data as it's being recorded. Whereas this underwater mooring, you have to wait until you recover it to get any of the data. And what I also want to highlight with these different examples is the different types of uses. So you can go from a pretty simple setup which looks at maybe a long time series like this example here in the middle. We can set this up to record for a year and at a pretty at an hourly interval, so not a high resolution necessarily but still pretty good, and get a good idea of the general circulation in the area. But we could also have a much more complex setup like in the middle here. So here we have over quite a large depth, we have a variety of floats to keep this string vertical, as vertical as possible. We have different ways of measuring velocity, current velocities, and we could also add a bunch of temperature, salinity, pressure sensors to get an idea of the conductivity, temperature, and depth profiles over time. And depending on how high a resolution you place these different instruments, you can cover a wide variety of, you can cover much, much, you can either cover smaller or larger scales. And again, the longer you leave it out, the longer the temporal scales that you can cover. So as you can see, I've kind of highlighted quite a range of scale because the moorings aren't so specific in what particular time set to cover. It depends really a lot on how you set up the mooring. One thing to note is that another type of system that's very similar to this is a floating profiler. So basically it works in principle as the same as the setups here, except there is no bottom weight. Instead, the buoyancy at the surface is strong enough to perhaps hold a CTD, and so within the buoyancy the CTD can sit, and then there's an engine that a motor that can lower it as it to allow it to make a profile and then pull it back up when it's finished. And you can have this drift, or well, I don't think you'd have a drift, but you can anchor it to the bottom or to the shore so that it can make these profiles in a particular location over a longer period. So this is an example of some mooring data, kind of similar to the setup I described here. So this is taken from the Denmark Strait between Iceland and Greenland. And in the top plot we see velocity over several days. Here at the bottom you can see the time, so from July 17th to July 20th. The second two plots show the same velocity data but in vector form, so you can see the change in direction of the current relative to this ADC's position. but to this mooring's position. And then the bottom plot shows temperature. So these are from a bunch of thermistors strung along the mooring. So it covers about 150 meters here. There's the height above the seafloor. And the black line highlights the depth of the ADCP that was on the mooring. So that's this data here. And the white line approximates the depth or the height of the dense plume of water that flows through the Denmark Strait. So we can see a lot of variability in the data here. So a lot of variability in temperature when we just kind of stay with one depth here, for example. A lot of variability in the plume's height over a pretty short time period, but also a lot of variability in the position of the instrument. So every line represents one of the instruments. So here, these thin black lines. And so you can see they're really moved within the water column, depending on by the currents, even to the point of being knocked down by 50 meters here. And so when you have something like this happening, it becomes quite a bit of a problem because, for example, when this ADCP is looking upwards, so for example, it looks upwards. Once it's tilted to a certain point, the measurements aren't really reliable. So this is a good example of a potential uncertainty within our data results. Something we'll get into in more detail in a later lecture. And so I've tried to provide an example of sort of the most typical or most used measurement platforms, and try to cover most of the scales that we discussed in the first lecture. But these are certainly not the only measurement platforms out there. There are really a lot more, and there's kind of no limit. Everything from small submarines, like the Jago from, I think it's from Avi, to a blimp and a Zodiac that were used in a recent campaign on the Baltic Sea, looking at submesoscale eddies in the area. If you're interested, this is quite an interesting campaign, pretty unique. You could check it out here at this website. This is an example of here in the middle here, an example of a small catamaran that's mounted with many different instruments and is could be, for example, towed behind a research vessel, but by shifting it outside of the ship's wake, we can get really good measurements in the ocean, in the surface mix layer, and the upper layer of the ocean that isn't affected by the ship itself, which is often a problem when we're looking at just using the typical CTD CAS or instruments that are pulled behind a ship. And here's an example of this is just to highlight this use of a ferry box in either ferries or transport ships, which I discussed earlier. So this concludes the second lecture, looking at measurement platforms and measurement strategies. And so just to try and summarize what we've looked at in this lecture, we can really see that there's a wide variety of measurement platforms out there and different ways of taking measurements, so the measurement strategies, without even really getting into the different instruments that are out there, because that's an even larger number. But what's important to take from this is that not all platforms, not all strategies are the same, and not all work. Not all of them might work for the situation that you're in, for the research question that you have. And so it's very important before you go out and take any measurements, before you invest in a new instrument, a new platform, to really consider what it is that you're trying to do. What is the research question that you're trying to answer? What are the related scales of the ocean processes that you need to capture in order to answer this research question? So one of the worst positions you can kind of get yourself into is to be given data from a particular instrument, from a particular platform, and told to try and answer a research question that covers scales that aren't included in this data. And although at first it may seem that you can find ways around this, it really often isn't the case and can be quite frustrating in the end. And so being able to go from zero, so to say, and choose your instruments, choose your platform, choose your strategy is one of the key steps to being successful at experimental oceanography. And this concludes the fourth and final video of Lecture 2.